story of Vyas and the compilation of the Srimad Bhagavatam began, we saw that the question actually that the story was in response to, what was Srila Vyasadeva's inspiration to write this book? After all, he had done so much already. He had compiled the entirety of the Vedic literatures. He had edited the Puranas. He had summarized the Vedas even. He had divided the Vedas first into four from the original Yajurveda, and then even summarized them, including the Mahabharata, in the Vedanta Sutra. It was an incredible work, and yet Srila Vyasadeva felt no satisfaction or feeling of accomplishment within his heart. This was the cause of his being impelled to write the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the sense that because of his feeling of a lack, because when one accomplishes something, one feels satisfied. But despite that, everything that Srila Vyasadeva had accomplished, he was feeling no satisfaction. So that impelled him to wonder why. And at that point, Narada Muni arrived. This was at the beginning of chapter 5 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Narada Muni arrived and hinted that the cause of the problem was that Srila Vyasadeva had not directly glorified Krishna. He had written so much, but in especially the Vedic literatures, or more or less all that he had written, he had described things as if anything or something was separate from Krishna. And when something is described as separate from Krishna, it reacts with the consciousness. It causes deeper entanglement in the material world. So Vyas was explained this by Narada Muni, who even said that even if a literature is composed with the highest of literary ornaments used to decorate it, still if it does not glorify Krishna directly, then it is useless. And also he said that the literature, even if it is imperfectly composed, if it directly glorifies Krishna, the transcendentalists will prefer that literature. And he even said that literature that glorifies knowledge of the spiritual unity of all existence, if that doesn't come to the point of glorifying the source of that spiritual unity, Krishna, it too is not wonderful. And then, in text 13, Narada Muni told Vyasadeva, your vision is completely perfect. You already understand these things. Your good fame is spotless. You are firm in vow and situated in truthfulness. You're fully qualified. And thus, you can think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance. You meditate. And you fully realize what I have spoken to you. And that will be for the benefit and the liberation of people in general, because it will free them from material bondage. So, after describing this and more to Srila Vyasadeva, Narada Muni spoke his whole life story, how he became a devotee, how his life, by virtue of the association of exalted personalities and hearing from them, he imbibed the essence of spiritual life, the most confidential knowledge. And he spent, even though he was a young boy, he spent his life accepting everything as Krishna's mercy, and he was always engaged in chanting. He wandered alone, fearlessly, It is easy to read about these things, but to be fearless in this world is very difficult. In fact, for someone who is not deeply spiritually realized, it is impossible to be fearless in this world, because there is always something you want and always something you don't want, and you never know which one is going to occur. So one is afraid of getting what one doesn't want, and one is afraid of losing what one wants. So there is always fear in this world. Only one who is spiritually advanced can actually be fearless. Vita ragavaya krodam manmaya marupasvita bhavo gyanatapasa puta mad bhava magata. So one has to actually come to this platform. And Narada Muni did this, as he told Vyasadeva, as he was telling his story. So he did this, and he wandered around, and then eventually he sat and meditated, and the Lord appeared to him. And the Lord appeared to him, and then very quickly disappeared. And the Lord told him, I have come to you just to increase your hankering to see me. But at this point, you are not pure enough to see me. Namam drashtani iharati. You don't deserve it because you are impure still. You have some impurity still in the heart. Even though you're so pure, you have some impurity still in the heart. Kajmalanam and Ludarshaham Kuyogina. Your serving mood is not yet mature. So you have to remain for some time without seeing me. And at that point, the Lord he stopped speaking. He had disappeared from the heart of Narada Muni, and he was only present in his voice. And then he stopped speaking, and Narada Muni felt very grateful to have seen the Lord even once directly. It's called Shakshatkar, when one actually sees the Lord directly. But yet, he was in separation from Krishna, because it isn't that one sees Krishna and one has a taste of deep spiritual life and then one can forget about it. No. And think how fortunate one is. No, on the other hand, one wants more and more and more and more. So Narada Muni spent the rest of his life just chanting Krishna's glories and experiencing Krishna's presence in that way. And then the Bhagavatam described how Narada Muni described to Vyasadeva in the Bhagavatam how he eventually died, attained the spiritual body, and then had the potency to wander anywhere and everywhere throughout the world. This world, the spiritual world, all planets, anywhere in the material creation, he could wander at his free will. Truly, no one is as free as Narada Muni. We are limited in so many ways. We are conditioned, we are controlled, we can never do what we want. But Narada Muni has full freedom because he's always chanting Krishna's glories. This situates one in the fully free condition of existence. So after explaining the story of his life, his few lives to Vyasadeva, Narada Muni left. And then these sages who were questioning Suta Goswami, they asked, what did Srila Vyasadeva do after Narada left? And that's the first verse of the seventh chapter. Shonaka Rishi said, O Suta, the great and transcendentally powerful Vyas, heard everything from Sri Narada Muni. So after Narada's departure, what did Vyasadeva do? He had been given so much instructions on how to prosecute spiritual life. Just from the life of Narada Muni, he had picked up many hints and important instructions on how to prosecute spiritual life. Plus, he had direct instructions from Narada as what he should do. And what was that? He should meditate upon the Lord and realize something deeply, and then do something for the good of people in general, help them become free from the miseries which afflict every embodied soul. Every living entity must be miserable despite the struggle to be always happy. Everyone is controlled by so much misery, lamentation, unhappiness. So Vyasadeva had received the instruction, the good-hearted, compassionate instruction of his Guru Maharaj to do something for everyone else as a product of your deep realization. So in the second verse and the third verse, it describes the preliminaries to Srila Vyasadeva's meditation as described by Srila Sita Goswami. On the western bank of the river Saraswati, which is intimately related with the Vedas, there is a cottage for meditation at Samyaprash, which enlivens the transcendental activities of the sages. So in that kuti, in that cottage, in that hermitage, Srila Vyasadeva, in his own ashram, which is surrounded by berry trees, badri trees, he sat down to meditate after touching water for purification. Because one has to purify one's body, one has to purify one's mind. This is what's described. Now, the next four verses, 4, 5, 6, and 7, are especially important. This section is especially important. One, in some senses, can say that this is the most important part of the entirety of the Bhagavatam. Why? Is because this is Srila Vyasadeva's meditation and his revelation, and the rest of the Bhagavatam is an expansion of what he realizes in these four verses, which we'll hear right now. So this is the Bhagavatam in its kernel form. Very important. And then, following that, in the verse in text 10, there's a famous verse that's so famous and so potent that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained it in 64 different ways. And then explained further about it to Sanatana Goswami. These verses are infinitely deep. All of these verses are so powerful. Truly, they embody Krishna and the entirety of our philosophy, of the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. So, somehow or another, I scheduled this one short period to speak about all these verses, and it's impossible for me to do them justice, even with my own limited abilities. But we will try to go through them so we get a feel for what this revelation of Vyasadeva was. So the first verse of what he actually realized is text 4. Very important. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihite amale apashyat purusham purnam maya chatara pashrayam. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihite yamale apashyat purusham purnam mayam chatara pashrayam. So the first two lines, or in the Sanskrit it's the first line, describes what he did, the nature of his meditation. And the second part, the second foot, describes what he saw, the first part of what he saw. And the second and third verses describe more of what he saw. But first, what did he do? He sat in meditation. Bhakti yogena manasi. So Srila Vyasadeva, sitting in that very holy place, being a qualified and holy person himself, being an exalted devotee, being actually an empowered, the personality of Godhead, he fixed his mind, bhakti yogena manasi. He fixed his mind in bhakti yoga. Amale. Samyad. Samyak pranite amale. He fixed his mind perfectly and engaged it, one-pointed, amale, without any material impurities. Amal. Mal means impurity. Amal means without any impurity. Free from impurities. In pure, not only pure devotional service, but in the highest level of pure devotional service in prema bhakti. Because unless one is on the platform of prema bhakti, one cannot have a direct revelation of the Lord. There are three stages of bhakti that are described by Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita in the Nectar Devotion. There's pure devotional service on the sadhana or practice platform, pure devotional service on the bhava or the preliminary platform to prema, and pure devotional service on the prema platform. On that prema platform, one does continuously revelate about the Lord. Because one is pure, one is actually fully connected to Him. His connection is fully mature and made. So he's fully always in yoga or connection with the Lord. That is prema bhakti. So therefore, in the Brahma Samhita, it describes Vedeshu dolavam adolavam matma bhakta yam shayama sundaram achintya guna sarupam govindam hari purusham tamaham bhajami, that the one premanjana, when his eyes are smeared with the anjana or the collyrium or the ointment, when his eyes are covered with love, premanjana bhakti valochanena, he sees Krishna at every moment. Yam shama sundaram, he sees the incredibly, inconceivably wonderful form of Krishna continuously due to the coating of love over his eyes. This is prema bhakti. So because Vyasadeva was on that platform and his bhakti yogena manasi, his mind was fully focused on the Lord in prema bhakti, he actually had this full revelation. So what did he see? Apashyat describes what he saw. Apashyat purusham purnam. And more will be said about the nature of the purusham purnam. Purusha purnam means the personality, a person, Purnam, the complete absolute truth, who is a supreme person, who is Krishna. And this will be confirmed by Srila Vyasadeva in a few verses later on, in the fourth verse. So he saw Purusha Purnam, Krishna. He saw the absolute supreme personality of Godhead. Purnam means complete. That person in his complete manifestation. So that means that he saw the Lord and his internal energy, because that is the complete manifestation of the Lord. Just like when we see the moon, we also naturally see the effulgence of the moon. So similarly, when one sees the Lord fully, one sees his internal energy as well. That means that he saw Krishna, because Krishna without Vrindavan is not complete. Because Krishna means the manifestation of the Lord in full, which means his qualities. He has qualities which include his dealings with his devotees. His Vrindavan devotees that even Lord Narayan does not have. So that is the complete Purusha. He even saw Srimati Radharani with the Lord and all the pastimes of the Lord. This is the complete revelation of Krishna. But not only that, So he saw first a pashyat puna purusham, and then maya chatad apashraya. He saw also, as will be described in this verse and the next verse, he saw four things basically. He saw the Lord and his internal energy and the wonderful, incredible dealings between the Lord and his internal energy. That is Krishna and Vrindavan and Krishna and all the elements of the spiritual world. He saw all the expansions of Krishna. He saw the Brahma Jyoti. He saw the Paramatma, the super soul feature of the Lord. All these are included in Purna Purusha, the complete person. And then he also saw Maya, the Lord's Maya. This is the Antaranga Shakti of Krishna, the external energy of the Lord. And this Maya was Tad Apasrayam. This means that Maya was fully under the control of Krishna. Now it's very important, and Prabhupada speaks about this in the purport, and Srila Jiva Goswami shows so much intellectual dexterity to point these things out, that this is very important because there are so-called spiritualists or spiritualists, the Mayavadis, that think that the absolute truth, Brahman, somehow becomes affected by his external energy and then becomes two things, Ishvara and Jiva. That the Lord, the Purna Purusha, falls into Maya more or less. Becomes influenced by his own Maya Shakti. And therefore he becomes differentiated into the Supreme Lord or the Ishvara and the Jiva. And the Jiva, the Mayavadis say, is nothing but the Lord under the influence of Maya. And we just have to remove the influence of Maya and we become the Lord. But this is not what Srila Vyasadeva is saying at all. He's saying rather than the Lord being under the control of his Maya Shakti, say Maya Chattara Pashrayam. That this Maya Shakti is completely under the control of Krishna. There's another verse in the second canto that says, Maya aparaite abhimukhe cha balajamanam. That means that Maya has a particular relationship with the Lord that will be described in the next verse. And Maya is very, very valaja, ashamed, because of her thankless task of having to put the jivas in the prison house of the material world and completely controlling them. So Maya always stays far away, abhimukhe. She doesn't face the Lord even. She cannot even face the Lord, what to speak of even controlling him, like the Mayavadis say, and placing him under his control. So here is Srila Vyasadeva's revelation. So we'll read Prabhupada's translation. Thus, Srila Vyasadeva fixed his mind, perfectly engaging it by linking it in devotional service. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranahite amale. By pure prema bhakti, he focused his mind without any tinge of materialism, and thus apashyat purusha puranam. He saw the absolute personality of Godhead. That means, with all the internal energy and all the dealings in the spiritual world, especially Vrindavan, because if he did not see this, how could he describe it in the 10th canto? And also, he saw Maya, Mayam Chattara Pashrayam. He saw the external energy which was fully under his control. The next verse, which continues what he saw. Because this wasn't all he saw. So he saw, so far he's described, he saw the Lord with his internal energies, plus he saw the Maya Shakti. That's three things so far. Then, yaya samohito jivatmanam trigunatmakam paropi manyute naitam tatkritam chabipadyate. Yaya samohito jivatmanam trigunatmakam paropi manyute naitam tatkritam chabipadyate. So, he saw the jivas, yaya samahuito jiva. He saw the jivas, the living entities, who, yaya samahuito, they were illusioned by, that maya, by that external energy, maya devi. Yaya samahuito jiva. So the jivas, not the Lord. Just look at the difference between the difference of description between how the Lord is described and how the jivas are described. The Lord has the maya chattara pashrayam. He has the external energy under control. And the jivas, yaya samahuito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. They, quite contrarily, are illusioned by that very same external energy, trigunatmakam, and they are under the spell of the three modes of material nature. Illusion, completely. And what is that illusion? The illusion is that they are made to think that paropi means that although they are spiritual, because this is the fourth energy that we have. There's the Lord, who is not energy, but the source of all the energy. Then there is the Maya Shakti, that is energy, the Maya energy of the Lord. And then there is the Antaranga Shakti, or the internal energy of the Lord. And then there is the Jiva, who is also, this is the Tattva Shakti. Paropi manyate means that the jiva, although he is spiritual by nature, manyate means he thinks anartam and identifies with all the anartas and unwanted desires and things in his heart. And tatkritam means he's entangled, chabipadyate. He's entangled and thereby undergoes all the reactions, karma. He's tightly under the control of the law of karma because of his illusion and delusion. Even though he is spiritual, Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta Chetra Gyakya Tata Para. That means that the soul, Chetra Gya, the soul is also spiritual as the internal energy. Vishnu Shakti is also spiritual. But under this illusion, avidya karma sanganya tritriya shakti uchite. That due to illusion, he's identifying with this. I am this. I am my body. And because of this illusion of identifying with the body, and in the mood of trying to exploit the material nature, rather than being the exploiter, rather than being the controller, rather than enjoying, he's simply in the prison house of the material world, tightly in the grip of maya, being forced to suffer so many things, unwanted things, anartas. So many anartas are forced upon his heart, and he grasps them and embraces them as if they were his own, himself. This is the situation of the conditioned soul. So Maya Devi is not able, certainly, to control the Lord. Rather, paite abhimukhe cha vilajamanam, she is shy in front of the Lord because she has the thankless task of controlling the living entities, not to make them suffer, but to rectify the living entities. To let the living entities on one side, on one hand, her business is to rectify the living entities so that they don't, so that they can try as much as they want to be happy in the material world, but can never succeed in being happy. And on the other side, to keep the living entities who are against the service of the Lord in the material world, separate from the spiritual world, because they have no qualification to be in the spiritual world. So Maya Devi has that thankless task of illusioning, deluding the conditioned souls who have gone bahirmukh, who have turned their back on Krishna. It's Prabhupada's translation. Due to this external energy, the living entities, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks of himself as a material product and thus undergoes the reactions of material misery. So this is what Srila Vyasadeva saw. He saw the absolute truth. These are the aspects of the absolute truth. Krishna, the spiritual world, the material energy, and the poor jivas who we are. The poor jivas who are trapped within this body, within this... to enjoy, but obtaining only suffering under the control of the three modes of material nature. So how can the living entity get free from this being tightly, so tightly in the grip of Maya? So Srila Vyasadeva also saw that, and that is the subject matter of the next verse. Anato upachamam shakshad bhakti yogam adhokshaje lokasya janato vidvam chakri satvatasam hitam. Anato upasamam shakshad bhakti yogam adhokshaje lokasya janato vidvam chakri satvatasam hitam. So these are anartis. These material desires, which are unwanted, unnecessary, unrequired for the living entity, they are impositions, they are upadis, they are impositions on the true spiritual nature of the living entity. Impositions like the body itself, the mind, so many identifications that cause so much trouble in this world. Everyone is divided by these upadis or false identifications. They simply divide everyone. If you think in one particular way, if you think I'm an Australian, then you are divided against everyone who is not an Australian. If you think you're a man, you're in a different category than the women. If you think that I am a scholar, then you're in a different category. If you think that I'm 50 years old, you're in a different category than everyone who is not 50 years old. If you think you're strong, then you're in a... If you think... You're in a different category. So this is what Maya does. This is what the anartas do. They impose different upadis or separating factors, impositions on the consciousness, on the living entities. And therefore, there is no way the living entity can be peaceful or happy or unified or loving in this world. Because at every step, depending upon what anatta is in his consciousness, at every step, he's divided against almost everyone and struggling against almost everyone. If you're a human being, there's all those animals and birds and bugs who are not human beings. If you're a Republican, you're against the Democrats and the laborers and everyone else. All these are just artificial impositions on the consciousness. So these are all external. Anartha upashamam shakshad. They're all external, unrequired, superfluous to the living entity. And they are the cause of so much strife, so much suffering. So anartha upashamam shakshad. These, shakshad means directly. They can be directly removed, skimmed off the heart, from the body, from the mind, from the consciousness. Consciousness can be cleaned of all these anartas. Anartha upashamam shakshad. How? Bhakti yoga adhokshaje. By performing bhakti yoga, sadhana bhakti, to adhokshaje. Adhokshaje means he who is beyond our material perception, our sense perception. One's senses cannot achieve him. This is the spiritual person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But adhokshaja, there are many adhokshajas. Even Lord Vishnu is adhokshaja. But specifically, Vyasadeva saw Krishna. So adhokshaja is actually a direct name of Krishna as well. And that's who he is specifically referring to. Adhokshaja means, the name is used for Krishna in the, I think it's in the Harivamsa Purana, where it means he who has taken his birth from the cart, the wheel of the cart, because after Krishna, after Putana was killed also, he was put under there, under the cart, and then he was going to be killed. The Shakatashura was trying to kill him, and he kicked it. So he has taken a new birth, it seemed, because a little baby was trying to be killed. So he was born from the wheel of the cart, like that. So therefore, Krishna's direct name is Adhokshaja. So one should perform bhakti yoga to Adhokshaja, to Krishna. And all the anartas can be removed from the heart. That is sadhana bhakti, which is composed primarily of hearing, chanting, etc. Lokasya janato vidvam, because the people of the world don't know this. Rather, they are struggling in so many other ways to remove their miseries. Then, therefore, Chakre Satvita Samhita. Srila Vyasadeva compiled this Satvita Samhita. He compiled this Srimad Bhagavatam specifically for this purpose, to raise the conditioned souls, to remove their miseries, to raise them out of the material world, beyond all anartas, beyond all upatis, and understand, who am I? I am Krishna's servant, and everyone else, every other living entity is Krishna's servant as well. One time Prabhupada was asked, how many disciples do you have? And what was Prabhupada's answer? Huh? No? You know what his answer was? They're unlimited. But some know it and some don't. Meaning how many devotees of Krishna there are. Because every jiva sarupoi Krishna nityada. That every living entity, even consciously or whether unconsciously of it, is a servant of Krishna. It's unavoidable. We are. This is our nature. This is our sarup. This is our sanatan dharma, that which cannot be separated from us, our existence. But we can forget it, but it cannot be removed from us. So to reestablish the living entities in that eternal service to Krishna, Srila Vyasadeva, after having this revelation of the Lord and all his energies and all his dealings, the Maya Shakti, the Jiva, what the cause of the Jiva's what the cause of the Jiva's bewilderment, the cure for the jiva's bewilderment? Everything was seen by him. And therefore, after seeing everything by his mature revelation, then chakre satvita samhita, then he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam. Text 7. Yasyam vai shriyamanayam krishne parama purushe bhakti upadyate pumsam shokamoha bhayapaha. Yasyam vai shriyamanayam krishne parama purushe bhakti upadyate pumsam shokamoha bhayapaha. Yasyam vai, this Vedic literature, the Srimad Bhagavatam, vai means certainly, Shriyamayam. Simply, this is why he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, because simply by giving oral reception to it, simply by hearing it, Krishne, so here is direct mention of Krishna by him, Paramapurushe means the same as the Purnapurusha, the supreme person, supreme and complete personality of Godhead. Bhakti rupadyate pumsam. Pumsam means person. So, simply by giving oral reception, not mechanically, but submissively in the proper mood, then what happens? By Krishna's mercy, not by the mechanical, just by the sitting there, by the mechanical hearing process, but rather, if one's consciousness is proper, by Krishna's mercy, what occurs? Krishne paramapurushe bhaktir upadyate. Upadyate means it sprouts up, it is generated, it is manifest. What is manifest? Bhakti. Pure devotional service from sadhana to prema. Especially prema is manifest by giving oral reception to the Srimad Bhagavatam. And who is that prema or love directed to? Krishna. Unto Krishna, who is the Paramapurusha, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is certainly the prime effect of hearing the Bhagavatam. And what is the what other effects are there? One's relationship is completely cut off with one's material body, and one, as we heard in the case of Narada Muni, his spiritual body was completely manifest. And one relationship with the material body is cut off, then what happens? Soka moha bhayapaha. Also cut off is all shoka, which means lamentation, moha, all illusion, and bhaya, means all fear. All this is completely eradicated, and one completely cuts off his relationship with the material body and develops fully his spiritual identity. Fully developed spiritual identity means that I am Krishna's beloved and Krishna is mine. Premava. So this incredibly high stage happens because of how? How does it happen? Certainly happens. Yasyam vai shriyamanayam. It happens by giving oral reception to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Simply by giving oral reception to this Vedic literature, the feeling for loving devotional service to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness. Then text 8. The great sage Vyasadev, sa samhitam bhagavatim kridvanu kramya chatmajam sukam adyapayam masha nivritti niratam muni. The great sage Vyasadeva, after compiling the Srimad Bhagavatam and revising it, taught it to his own son, Sri Sukadeva Goswami. We can say that naturally one wants to give the best thing that one has to one's son. But he was qualified in so many ways. As Prabhupada explains in his purport, in the Brahma Vivarta Purana, it describes, and also in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, quoting from, or the 9th canto, quoting from Brahma Vivarta Purana, it describes that Sukadeva Goswami was fully realized. He was Nivritti Niritam Muni. He was already a sage. He was already in the Nivritti Marg. He wasn't in Pravritti Marg, which means the Vedic path by which one attempts to enjoy the material world, but rather he was a complete renunciate. He was fully Brahman realized. He was fully realized on the Brahman platform, seeing everything as the manifest energy of the Lord. And he was still in the womb of Srila Vyasadeva's wife. And he refused to come out of the womb because he didn't want to become entangled within the material world. He was fearful of the material world. And ultimately, he made Srila Vyasadeva go and bring Krishna from Dwarka while still in the womb to promise him. He knew who Krishna was. And Krishna promised him, don't worry, if you come out, you will not become entangled in Maya. And only then Sukadeva Goswami came out. And then when he came out, he immediately left home because he still didn't want to become entangled in any family relationships, bodily relationships. And Srila Vyasadeva, as we heard in the second canto, he went looking for him, running after him, and all he heard in response to his calls was the echo of the trees and bushes, because Sukadeva didn't want to come back. He was already free and relieved. He had no material desires, no material entanglement. Yet, he heard the Bhagavatam and went to the great trouble of learning the entirety of the Bhagavatam, which is 18,000 verses, from his father. Because when he was out there, as described in the Brahma Vivarta Purana, when he was separated from Srila Vyasadeva, the disciples of Srila Vyasadeva came by and they were singing sweetly some verses of the Bhagavatam. Very, very sweet verses that describe the characteristics and qualities, the incredible way that Krishna deals with his devotees, describing the incredible, sweet, and charming beauty of Krishna. And even though he was on the complete spiritual platform, he returned immediately to hear about Krishna. So that means, not as the Mayavadis say, because if the Mayavadis say that the Lord's pastimes are all composed of Maya, they're all in the material world. So then why would Sukadeva Goswami have returned to spend so much trouble hearing these pastimes if they were just composed of the material energy, because he is above the material energy, he's on the Brahman platform? No. He came back because Krishna is the realization of Krishna, of one's loving relationship with Krishna, is completely transcendental, is the highest, most sweet realization. And practically speaking, the Bhagavatam and those verses and hearing about Krishna knocked Srila Vyasadeva off of the Brahman platform to elevate him higher to the platform of Bhagavan realization. So therefore, Vyasadeva, after compiling the Srimad Bhagavatam and revising it, he taught it to his own son, Srila Sukadeva Goswami, who was already engaged in self-realization. He was already in the Nivritti Marg. He was already fully renounced, and he was therefore completely qualified to actually hear the Bhagavatam and learn it. So after hearing how about the revelation of Vyasadeva and how he taught it to Sukadeva Goswami, who later taught it to Sukha, he taught it to Sukha, and Sukha taught it to Suta Goswami, and the sages of Namasharanya are now just hearing from Sutta Goswami this Bhagavatam. So there is a continuity of words, of mentality, of heart. They all had the same realization that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, that all living entities are meant to serve Him, that the highest realization is love for Krishna and full service in Goloka Vrindavan. These personalities, Srila Vyasadeva, Sukadeva Goswami, Sutta Goswami, they were all had the same realization. This is parampara. So then the sages asked in text 9, Shonaka Rishi asked Sutta Goswami, Srila Sukadeva Goswami was already on the path of self-realization, and thus he was pleased with his own self. He was an Atmarama. He was already fully satisfied. If one is fully satisfied, one doesn't have to look to anything external to increase his satisfaction, because one's already satisfied. It's only when one is lacking something that one tries to get something. So what, Shonaka Rishi is asking, why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of this vast literature if he was already fully Atmaram? Atma Arama means that he's fully satisfied in the self. He was already on the Brahman platform. Why, unless the Bhagavatam was higher than the Brahman, or situated on it, and the Bhagavan realization was the highest, why would he have taken the trouble to understand, to study? And it was a lot of trouble, 18,000 verses. So now, in text 10, that is the answer to that question. It is implied already that Sukadeva Goswami wanted something higher than the platform that he was on, the Brahman platform, and he was attracted to that higher with the stories of Krishna, the Bhagavan realization. But this verse, the reply to the sage's question, says that not only does Sukadeva prefer Krishna realization, Krishna service, Bhagavan realization, but Atmaramas Chamunajo, that so many Atmaramas, not only Sukadeva, but many, 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 many varieties of Atmaramas, they love to hear the pastimes of Krishna. Itam Bhuta Guna Hari. Hari means Krishna. So here is this very famous and wonderful verse that Lord Chaitanya described in so many ways. Atmaramascha munayo nagrantapi urukrame kurvanti ahaitukim bhaktim itam buddha guno hari. Atmaramascha munajo nagrantapi urukrame kurvanti ahaitukim bhaktim itam buddha guno hari. So all types of Atmaramas and sages. Atmaramascha munajo nagranta means that they are freed from all bondage. They're already liberated from the material world. They are completely detached from everything material. They would not stoop to trying to get some pleasure from anything composed of matter. So no grant api, in spite of the fact that they are already self-satisfied, in spite of the fact that they are nigranta, that they are free from all material attachments, they are already liberated. In spite of that, api means in spite of that, what do they do? Urukrami means unto the great adventurer, meaning especially, of course, the greatest adventurer is Krishna. But in spite of that, kurvanti ahaituki bhakti, they perform causeless, pure, devotional service to Krishna, who performs itam bhuta, wonderful guna. He has wonderful, incredibly wonderful qualities. And therefore, they perform causeless devotional service to Hari, the Lord, who has so many wonderful qualities. And it's causeless, too. Their devotional service is causeless. When a Brahmavadi or an impersonalist worships the Lord, it is not causeless. Their wish to attain liberation in exchange for the worship of the Lord. Or the materialist or the Karmavadi worships Krishna. It is to gain some material gain, which these things are fine because everyone should worship Krishna. Tivrena bhakti yogeni ajeta purusha para. But these exalted personalities, even the most exalted personalities, their devotional service is causeless. They don't want to get anything from Krishna because the greatest pleasure actually comes from serving Krishna with no motive other than to please Krishna. And that is bhakti. Korvanti ahaituki bhaktim itambhuta gunahari. To that greatest of adventurers who possesses the most wonderful qualities, when the jiva serves that Lord, Krishna, Krishne Purusha Parama Purushe, when the jiva, who is jiva samohito, when he's illusioned by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, that illusion is removed and gradually or quickly he becomes established in this causeless devotional service to Krishna, which brings even the greater pleasure to one who is already satisfied within himself, the Atmarama. So Prabhupada's translation. All different varieties of Atmaramas, and his purport is very, very nice. Prabhupada's purport is very wonderful and reveals the many, many different kinds of Atmaramas that there are. And all of them, even if one thinks his Atma is the body, or if one thinks the Atma is the mind, or if one thinks the Atma is Krishna's servant, or if one thinks the Atma is just Brahman, regardless of what the one's concept of the Atma is, especially those established on the path of self-realization, even though freed from all kinds of material bondage, they desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. So why did Sukadev Goswami undergo the trouble? Because it's the nature of Lord Hari that even Atmaramas are attracted to him. How wonderful. And then in the final verse that we'll read, 11, Sukadev Goswami, son of Srila Sukadev Goswami, son of Srila Vyasadev, was not only transcendentally powerful, he was also very dear to the devotees of the Lord. Thus he underwent the study of this great narration, Srimad Bhagavatam. So this means, tying up to reiterate the point of how Srila Vyasadeva taught this to Sukadeva Goswami, who was already on the Brahman platform, and then how Srila Sukadeva Goswami gave up the Brahman platform for Bhagavan realization. He's reiterating that point, showing how Bhagavan realization is even higher. Suta Goswami is reiterating that point by saying that he was not only transcendentally powerful, but he was attracted from that Brahman platform by Krishna, because Krishna means the all-attractive one. And his heart was captivated. And then, as he heard the Bhagavatam, he began to discuss the Bhagavatam with the devotees, and he became very dear to the devotees. The devotees don't like Brahmavadis, Mayavadis. Mahaprabhu said we should avoid Mayavadis. But Sukadeva Goswami became a devotee, and therefore very dear to the devotees. And not only was he dear to the devotees, but the devotees became dear to him. And the word used is Vishnu Janapriya. He became the beloved of the devotees. The devotees loved him, and he loved the devotees. This is the nature of those who are exalted, who are actually Vishnajana, are exalted in devotional service. So thus, Sukadev underwent the study of this great narration, Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna. Very important section. So much more. I could have read all of Prabhupada's purports. I had sections of Prabhupada's purports to read. But I won't. Any questions or comments? There's different ways to explain that. There's some commentators who explain that. You recording this part?
Yes.
Not required.